when we bought it, it was just a derelict shell. And my family, anybody we knew, just were, you know, told us we were completely mad. We were in our 20s at the time. We didn't have any money. We didn't know how much it was going to cost to do this conversion, but we absolutely fell in love with it.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Country Life podcast with me, your host, James Fisher. I am joined once again, I believe this is the third time, by our interiors editor, Giles Kime. Welcome, Giles.
Hello, James.
How are you, mate? You well?
I'm very well indeed, thank you.
You've got a very exciting thing for us this week in which you are interviewing the interior designer Emma Sims-Hilditch. Can you tell us a little bit about Emma and your interview?
Yes, absolutely. She's very interesting in the respect that she, in my view, has almost completely turned the whole country house aesthetic on its head and reinvented it for the 21st century. She's a great believer in creating houses that aren't just elegant, but also function brilliantly and are perfectly configured for family life. I've also written a book about her that was published a couple of years ago. So I feel as though we're pretty much on the same wavelength.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I'm very excited to hear all about that. So without further ado, I will let you two crack on.
Thanks, James.
Hello, my name's Giles Kime. And needless to say, I'm really excited to have with me this morning Emma Sims-Hilditch, who is an interior designer with a vast experience of working on all sorts of different country houses. And in particular, she's got huge expertise in completely transforming period houses and reinventing them so that they are relevant to the 21st century. And that's what we're talking about today, is that whole process. I would really like to ask you, Emma, for an insight into what you see as the benefit of living in a sort of reinvented period house.
Hello, Giles, and thank you firstly very much for having me. I'm delighted to be here. And for me, talking about historic houses is probably something that gets me most excited in my life. I'm always immersed in them, whether it's in my own old building, which we have owned for 30 years and we've lived in, and we've developed and we've kind of made work for us and our family over those years, or whether it's working on our clients' beautiful homes. And I think for me, the most exciting thing about a historic house is the fact that it has such character, whether it's a cottage, whether it's a castle, whether it's a barn conversion that we might be doing. Any house with period features is really going to have a sort of head start in my book in terms of making into something really exciting.
And from an environmental perspective, presumably there are benefits in actually repurposing an old building rather than starting afresh.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's a very good point. And sustainability is sort of at the top of all our agendas, I think, nowadays. You know, it breaks my heart when I drive through the Cotswolds and I sometimes see a barn that might be crumbling because the roof hasn't been put back on by the farmer. Maybe he can't afford to do it, or maybe he hasn't got a grant to do it. But, you know, those houses have stood, or those barns might have stood for 200 or 300 years. And they could so easily be converted into a property that could be lived in. And, you know, for me, that's a logical way of being sustainable, is reusing an old building, repurposing it, perhaps, if it's a farm building. And I think, you know, actually, there have been certain sort of developments within the government, and I think they are encouraging restoring and restoration of these barns. In the old days, you know, even 20 years ago, it was very hard to convert a barn. But I think that nowadays it is slightly easier. So, yeah, for me, I think converting historic buildings or bringing them back to life is a very important part of being sustainable in our world, rather than starting again.
You mentioned your own house. How has that evolved over the 30 years that you and your family have lived there?
Well, we bought our house, as I say, 30 years ago, and it was a derelict schoolhouse in a little village in Wiltshire. And it had started life as three workmen's cottages. It was Grade 2 listed. It was listed, I think, in the 70s. And when we bought it, it was just a derelict shell. And my family, anybody we knew just were, you know, told us we were completely mad. We were in our 20s at the time. We didn't have any money. We didn't know how much it was going to cost to do this conversion, but we absolutely fell in love with it. It also had a little barn attached, sort of slightly attached, not properly attached, but right next door. And later on, we were able to buy the barn. So we started life in the cottage, in the schoolroom, which we converted into a cottage. We had the caretaker of the old school living next door until he died. And then we were able to start the work on the barn later and actually incorporate that into our living space, which really meant that we could kind of continue living in the same home with our three kids. And it was wonderful. I mean, we are naturally a very creative family. My husband, John, is I would say, the sort of closet architect stroke engineer in our family. He has a fantastic eye for buildings and for being able to see a space and understand how it could be with the right development, with the right kind of care and design. So he's brilliant at that, at the space planning. Our barn and our home on our cottage were on very different levels. So, you know, often you get this where you have to sort of incorporate different levels within an old house. And I love that. I love having properties where you walk up a few steps within the house, not an entire staircase, but maybe a few steps. It just makes the house feel very interesting. So, yeah, so our home was, I guess, the guinea pig. We did a lot of work on our home before we started working with my clients on theirs.
The challenge with any period building is that they were designed for a completely different way of life, for people living in a completely different century. Is there any advice you can give someone who is trying to use an old structure to create a 21st century home? How does one address those challenges?
I think that's something that we come across all the time. Many of our clients are buying homes which haven't maybe been, lived in by a sort of contemporary family. They've been maybe lived in by an old couple who perhaps have downsized. They might have lived in it in the same way for 40 years with a very small sort of back of house kitchen and utility spaces. But they're not really designed for the way people want to live nowadays, which I would say is probably, as we would expect, you know, a really lovely big kitchen, open plan to a sitting area and perhaps a dining area. The formality of living has definitely reduced. So people want a more relaxed way of life where, they don't eat in a separate dining room anymore. So for us, what we always do when we start out with a new project is we look at the space planning and we almost imagine it is a blank canvas, and we sort of think about how this space could work for modern living. A good example is a project we worked on in Dorset, which was a sort of 15th century manor house, and the kitchen was tiny in the sort of dark north facing room, and the sitting room / drawing room was a beautiful, sunny, large space with a fabulous stone fireplace. And I literally just was eyeing it up, thinking that would make the most incredible kitchen. Meanwhile, there was a very large formal dining room next door to this kitchen. And for me, I thought, okay, that for me, if I wanted to, you know, use this house as my own, I would want that as my sitting room. So this house completely sort of did a sort of rotation and we moved all of the spaces around. And I mean, it was a grade 2-star house. So we had to work very closely with obviously the listed buildings officer. We worked with an architect and a planning consultant as well. So it was complex. But as long as you don't change the fabric of the building, as you know, we were working with what we had. So into the big, beautiful inglenook fireplace, we put a fabulous arga and, you know, It was just repurposing the rooms in the home. Back of house spaces are really important, boot rooms, laundry rooms, utility spaces. And again, you know, they were probably in historically quite small little pokey rooms, but nowadays people want a really luxurious big utility space with maybe two washing machines and two dryers, or you know, a large Belfast sink. So that's something we work very hard on as well, to make sure that these houses actually are functional as well as look beautiful.
In the absence of being able to call on the expertise of a husband like John, who's obviously got a real skill for being able to transform places spatially, at what point do you think an architect needs to be involved in this whole process? And how do you balance that relationship between architect and interior designer?
That, I think, is a brilliant question. And I think it's one that probably many people want to know the answer to. And I would always say that, you know, if you're taking on a decent sized project that clearly you need help with, I would try and get together your team of interior designer and architect at the beginning of the project. Don't leave it to look for an interior designer later on, thinking that they're going to do the curtains and carpets and soft furnishings. As a practice, we are, as in a design practice, we are working very, very much hand in hand with the architect, working on the very early stages of space planning and concept for the house. Because we, having taken a great brief from the client, we would have a very good understanding of how that house wants to work from our client's perspective. And then the architect is thinking about the building, and obviously he's got a complex layer of detailing to think about in terms of the listing of the house, the planning side of the house, you know, planning applications, all sorts of a wealth of things that the architect will be working on whilst we're working on how maybe the client wants to live in that home. So for me, it's a sort of tripartite is always the best team. And we're there as a team. We work very closely with the architects. We're not kind of treading on each other's toes. We're working out who's doing what and what responsibilities we both have. And then we get on with our jobs, hopefully, you know, as I say, collaborating. It's a very important word in our business.
One of the great challenges with any old period building is that very often they were designed with quite small windows for all sorts of different reasons. How does one address that?
Yeah, I mean, I started life as a curtain maker. So windows to me are something that, you know, I look at very carefully when I first find when I'm first addressing an interior scheme. And you're right. I mean, it's so hard to, you've got to look at the light from all over the house. You've got to understand how that house is going to get the north, south, east and west light, and which rooms you're going to use for which areas. So, I mean, I always like to have a kitchen with a sunny aspect in the morning, because I feel, you know, when you come down in the morning, you want to be uplifted. It's much nicer to have a sunny kitchen for me than a west-facing kitchen. So once I've got my kind of ideal space for the kitchen, I then look at how much light we can get in. And window treatments, I mean, if you want to talk about the detail, I think a lot of people get frustrated by Roman blinds, which just kind of block out, you know, a quarter of the light at the top of a window. So we look at all of that. What I would say is that if you do have a dark north-facing room, perhaps, you know, that you always feel is a bit depressing, I would encourage you not to try and paint it a white or a bright color, because whatever you do to that room to try and make it bright, it won't be. And if you just paint it white, it's just going to feel, you know, like a doctor's waiting room. It's not going to feel like a lovely, cozy space. So if you've got a darker room with small windows, I would embrace that. And I'd encourage you to think about painting it a, you know, a warm yellow or a lovely ochre color, or something that's going to uplift you. And work with the fact that it's a darker room. I also would say that, you know, with many of the houses we work on, we look at, with the architect, we would look at how to bring in light from the roof through skylights. And that's an incredibly effective way. I've worked on many historic houses where we've put sort of roof lanterns right into the heart of the house, and it brings light down from above and totally transforms how a house will feel. So yeah, there are lots of ways to think about it.
And when you get to the stage of decorating, many period houses historically were kind of, when people were told that they would decorate them in a way that reflected the period in which they were built. Do you think that's still necessary, or do you think you can take a bit more of a kind of contemporary approach?
I think, yeah, I mean, I love period features. I love allowing the period features to sort of sing and stand out. And I think sometimes the beauty of less is more is really important to remember. So, you know, cluttering something up, maybe not the best way to deal with it. If you've got a stunning stone fireplace, that fireplace in itself is a architectural merit. It's something that's really beautiful, but you can then put a piece of modern art above it. You could equally put an 18th century oil landscape over it. I think for me that we shouldn't be prescriptive about that. That totally depends on the brief of the client and what they want their home to feel like. I love incorporating contemporary art into an old house because I think it brings a freshness to it. It brings a lightness to it. I think, you know, personally, I'm not mad on the sort of heavy Victorian art so much, the sort of landscapes, which I feel are almost too traditional. So yes, I love that sort of juxtaposition between slightly more contemporary with a historic house.
Anyone who's familiar with your work will be aware that your schemes have amazing sort of texture often. You as you say, you kind of make the most of architectural features. When they're actually having to sort of inject their own surfaces and their own texture, what advice would you give somebody who's choosing flooring and wall finishes, those sort of aspects of the project?
That's a really good question, Giles. It's incredible how important the wall and floor finishes are in a project. I can't sort of state that more clearly. I think it's so vital that you get that right. And too often I've been into homes where you just see a sort of sea of pale cream limestone which runs throughout the whole of the ground floor of a house. And houses would never have been like that in history. They would have evolved over time. Those floors would have, you know, evolved and developed. So you might have a brick floor in the pantry, or you might have a Portland stone floor in the hallway with a cabochon in it, or, you know, a little black cabochon in it. You might then go into an old timber floor. I think, you know, when we're creating new homes now, we always change the floor finishes throughout the ground floor to give that feeling of kind of changing the pace, I guess, and also just giving different characters to each room, because a sea of limestone is going to make every room feel the same. We obviously, in old houses, we like to try and restore what's there. So often there might be a room which has got a lovely old terracotta floor, and in which case we would try and restore that. Floor finishes are key, and I think it's one of the most difficult decisions for any client to make on their own. And it's why, you know, hopefully an interior design practice like us can really guide our clients through that complicated program of choice, which, let's face it, the choice is so endless out there now. And then wall finishes is another way to really create incredible character into what could be quite a bland space. So, you know, through paneling, whether it's a lovely raised and fielded panel, which would be expensive to do, or whether it's an applied molding, or even whether it's just a lovely TNG wall in a sort of back of house area to give that feeling of, you know, the traditional pantry or boot room. We love using TNG. So yeah, there are lots of really good ways. We even apply rough boarding to ceilings to create texture and to create that coziness. And I think that's what real homes should be. They should be cozy. They should be inviting. So yeah, the finishes are really important, Giles.
Are you finding that your clients' sort of hopes and aspirations for their houses has changed?
I think it's absolutely extraordinary, the change that we have seen people go through. I think no one could ever have predicted that, you know, people actually can now work from home. And I think they'll continue to want to do that now. And I think what's so wonderful is rather than working in a high-rise office building in London, they can actually work from a lovely studio in their garden. And so, yes, we look at studio office spaces, and those can be built from various different ways. But, you know, a sort of garden pavilion can be repurposed for a very good office, as long as you get the Wi-Fi in there. And we put a nice fridge out there so they can have their, you know, they can make their tea and coffee, maybe a boiling water tap, or a little coffee machine. And I think it just makes work so much more enjoyable. Basically, having a nice environment to work in is a wonder.
Emma, this has been a really interesting conversation. I feel as though we've learned a lot, we also barely touched the surface of this fascinating subject.
I agree.
And anybody who wants to discover more about your work can obviously go onto your website or onto your Instagram. It will give people a really good insight into this way that you manage to transform hero buildings with all that is required for 21st century family life. And it's a great resource for people. And I'm just really grateful to you for sharing your information and inspiration with us today. Thank you.